Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Minute 83 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week, once again, is Brian Lockhart from the Marine Corps Movie Minute. Welcome back, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me, and what's going on here?
Are you drunk already?
I have some thoughts on the alcohol.
All right. We're gonna have a lot of talking about alcohol over the rest of this week. Minute 83 begins with Henley finishing off his command, goes all the way to Hiltz warning Ramsey about getting moonshine on his clothing. So yeah, this minute continues what we were discussing yesterday, where you know the three token Americans get all the other prisoners rounded up around the water hole or whatever it's called, the water tank. Water tank, they called it, I think. Is that what they said? I think so. Yeah, the wash tank. Right, there you go.
Wash tank, yeah. Wash I don't know why tank. I put stack. Yeah.
Stack, tank, you know, one of those things. So the minute is the second half. It starts off with the second half of Henley's command, where he started off saying yesterday, all right, let's, and the end of his line is line up down here. So they're trying to do this in an orderly fashion, which makes you wonder. And then the scene cuts, and we finally get to see, you know, that Strachwitz is actually awake. Apparently, you know, the thing he heard 2 minutes ago actually got him moving. And not only is he fully dressed, you know, at this time, he's got his yearbook stuffed into his shirt, which I always find really funny.
Yeah, he does.
That's the little yearbook that he has that he pulls out and is able to. He has the dossier of all of the prisoners in there, but he's also walking around with a gun in his hand, which is probably not the safest thing to do. Not that he's going to be concerned about getting shot, but you know, still.
You know, I don't know. He did hear an explosion. He's ready. You know, he is a soldier. But he had to get dressed first. As I've been saying all week, I've been so excited about talking about it that he comes running out fully dressed. And you know, he couldn't come out like in his pajamas with just his like, his jacket on and his hat. He had to come out.
He's not dressed. Crawling.
No, not at all. He didn't get a heads up what was going to happen, though, either.
Nope.
So.
Nope, not at all. And then we see Werner run up to him from behind, and at that point, Strachwitz actually holsters his gun, which means that apparently he's been walking around with his gun out. You know, he now notices what's going on, and therefore is putting his gun away. So for whatever reason, they decided not to show us beforehand that he's walking around, trying to figure out what's going on, what that little explosion was. We also see another guard run up to him from behind.
Yeah, and he waves him off, too, like kind of like, all right, like, settle down. You know, I kind of see what's going on. I'm surprised they let him continue. They probably figured it wasn't worth, the hassle.
Yeah, that's my guess. But maybe he stops because he says, okay, it's nothing, you know, just everyone's got together to have a little drink.
Yeah, they're not escaping. They're not up to anything illicit per se. They're just, you know, having some tomfoolery or whatever.
Exactly. I doubt that Strachwitz would use that phrase, but yes. Tomfoolery.
I'm sure that's exactly what he said.
Of course, completely. Completely.
The old German, you know, the old German phrase.
Yeah. Then we hear in the background, you know, we hear Hilt say, you know, line up and, you know, an orderly fashion. And they're trying to do this as orderly as possible. It makes you wonder how long it's been since a lot of these people have had a drink. And then we get a wider shot of them pouring the booze into everyone's cups. Because as you mentioned yesterday, you know, Colin's the only one we see who actually takes out his cup. But somehow everyone else miraculously has their cups.
Well, they had a whole bunch on the table. So we'll just assume that they had two lines. One line to pick up a cup and the next line to come through and actually get the drink.
Could be. But, you know, did they have 600 cups there? And how's everyone going to recognize their own cup?
Right. Yeah, that's an awful lot of guys there. And there was only maybe 20 cops there.
Exactly. Depends on how quickly they're going to take their drinks. You know, yeah. You never know. And I mean, I'm going to say this over the next few days, but they waste a hell of a lot. There's so much that's being spilled along the way. With the way this is not the most efficient way to be doing it.
I was kind of laughing to myself because I'm like, well, what they're in this for the sake of speediness, they're just kind of pouring and the guys are supposed to kind of walk by and get their cup under like one after the other. But they, like you said, they end up wasting so much more, and it's really not that efficient at all. They would just be better off, you know, taking some of their time, pour a little. Instead, it's just like
exactly. It's not like everyone's riding to get there and get their drinks.
I think James Garner is the one actually spilling more than anybody else. Although,
he'll spill a lot also.
Yeah, no, they both do. I mean, all three of them. That is, they're. I'm watching it just hit the ground.
We're discussing. Goff is also pouring to people.
Yeah, because they got two. Right, well, Steve McQueen's right. Got. That's
right.
Yeah,
he's right next to him.
Hilt has two. Yeah, and he's kind of helping, but not really. He's helping spill it all over the place.
Exactly, and then we have the the exposition of Ramsay saying, oh. That explains what happened to the potatoes.
That's one of my favorite lines because I forgot about this whole thing. And I'm like, when he's like early hours, he's like, what the hell happened to all the potatoes? And I'm like, yeah, what did they do with the potatoes? Because I totally forgot about this bit. And then, when they were making their shine, I'm like, oh, that's what happened to the potatoes. So I like that they called it out.
Exactly. Just to explain to people that if you didn't notice, they used the potatoes for this.
Right.
And then Mac says, oh, there's no harm in closing down Tom for the day. Now, wait a second. They've all just gotten a little bit of booze in the morning. They're going to close out the entire day. We established earlier this week that, sunrise is, let's be generous. Let's say it starts, sunrise is at 4:30, sunset is at 9. That's a long day for them to give up digging because of the fact that everyone's got a little bit of booze in the morning.
I'm sure that this is some strong stuff, but is it that strong? And it's not like they're having, like, more than a shot, really. I mean, they're not getting much.
Exactly.
This is like the two loaves of bread and fish that, Jesus spreads around all those people. It's like, there's not that much booze there, but yet they still are, everybody gets a drink. So
yeah, this is a clown car. It's a clown car.
Yeah. Yeah.
The clown car
just keeps coming.
Booze.
Yeah.
It's true. Maybe it's the miracle of Luftwaffe Luft 3.
Yeah, I knew there was a 3 in there somewhere. I had it looked up and then I totally forgot.
Yeah, and then Roger goes, "Nah, I suppose it'll do us a good to let off a bit of steam." Which what he's basically acknowledging here is that the Americans are the ones who thought of the idea of let's take a break. we're all working a little too hard. Let's just have a day to booze off. And then Roger says something very interesting that helps set up what's going to happen over the next few minutes and even into next week a little bit. The fact that he basically says, "Well, we've only got 14 feet to go," meaning we're close to the end. Let's take a little break. To tell us also that, they're really close.
Yeah.
Now, the problem I have with that is that I would think the other way around. I would think, okay, we have 14 feet to go. Let's get that done as quickly as possible.
Oh, for sure. And I was also wondering, too, I'm like, I don't recall them, like, discussing, like, oh, we do so many feet a day or 1 foot a day or something like that. Like, so how close are they? Like, is that 2 weeks worth of work or is that like 2 days worth of work?
Exactly.
If they really,
Right. I mean, they established at the beginning that they're supposed to be digging 335 feet. So it means they've dug 321 feet so far. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. Now in real life, it took like what? It took almost like a full year.
It took a full year, but they had to actually take a break through part of it. Because the ground was frozen.
Ah, okay.
They weren't able to dig. They actually called it the tunneling season. Like the summer months were the tunneling season.
All right, gotcha. It's kind of like especially if I'm from upstate New York originally, and like there's winter and then there's road construction season.
Exactly. There you go. I grew up in Michigan. I know the same. I know the feeling.
Okay. Yeah, it's the same stuff.
Yes, exactly. Which makes a lot of sense. And then Ramsay says, "Well, if that's the case, then it's time for a drink." No, but also one of the things Roger says is that you can feel it all around the camp. Now, everyone knows that they're 14 feet away. You know, they're not keeping any of this secret at all.
Right.
It what surprised me the most is that the Germans didn't know that this was going on. I mean, in the movie itself, because of the way they're making it sound as if it's a known fact that this is what they're doing. So it baffles me every time to think about it, you know, that the way that they're all, you know, talking so nonchalantly about everything, and they make it sound as if everybody knows what's going on. Wait a second. If everybody knows, let's say there's 600 prisoners in the camp. There's not a single one who's going to accidentally say something that's going to tip off the Germans that they're digging a tunnel, or tip off the Germans, or even if there was someone who was an informer or something like that.
Right, right.
I mean, in real life, there was no informer, so that makes sense. But you'd think that it would be possible. I mean, again, we discussed earlier this week about Stalag 17. I mean, Stalag 17 is all about the fact that they have an informer in the camp, you know, among the POWs, and they establish there. I mean, I'm not going to give away spoilers for the movie about who the informer was, but they established that it's very possible that. You know, you had a German living in America at the time of the World War II broke out, you know, speaks perfect English. You know, they could easily put him in a camp like this and nobody would know the difference. You know, they wouldn't know.
Yeah. And even if they didn't do that, though, it's you take somebody who clearly might be a weak link and you turn them.
Right.
You know, that could also be very possible. Hey, you're going to get a little extra fringe benefits here. You want some extra can of peaches. You want a nice blanket for your room, you know, like
a few cigarettes,
you know, in the winter months. Yeah, exactly. I can make life very, you know, pleasant for you here. And somebody might, you know, if they target the right person might do that. Yeah. Or they could even threaten the right person depending on the situation, you know?
Correct.
And they might cave that way.
Right. And then we go back to seeing Hiltz and Goff spilling all of their booze on the ground. Someone says, what's this stuff, Hiltz? His response is moonshine, American moonshine. Now I remember moonshine from you know, when the Dukes of Hazzard was on, you know, back when the TV show was on in the 70s and 80s, the whole idea of moonshine, and then you got Smokey and the Bandit and stuff like that. So like I always knew about moonshine. I never thought to think about what moonshine is made out of. Until I just, you know, was going into detail here. What do you know about moonshine? About how you make moonshine from potatoes? Did you do any?
I found a recipe actually for potato moonshine, which is basically vodka. You know, but to me, moonshine was always whiskey.
Yes.
You know, that's how I always knew it. I've seen some clear moonshine. There was where I live, it was pretty big with moonshine for a while. I remember when I first moved here, they shut down a pretty big still that was operating out. The sheriff did. Like, so I'm like, even just a few years ago, it seemed like it was still
a
thing.
In fact,
there's a No. The sheriff raided the moonshiners, and there was no General Lee. There was no Burt Reynolds, White Lightning, you know, escaping. No, they just captured, you know, they just raided the place, shut it down. But, there's a local brewery here, and their tagline is they are our county's first legal brewery because they're not the first brewery. Okay. They're the first legal brewery just because for so long things were illicit. But yeah, I always also knew that if you drink moonshine, you're going to go blind. That was another one of my, kind of things about it, that if it's, and it's usually pretty strong and it's usually pretty flammable, but I didn't think about it, but I never even considered vodka being something that would be considered moonshine, you know?
Right.
But
yeah, I mean, I also looked this up and we discussed this a little bit last week, but revisited it a little bit. I mean, besides potatoes, you need malted barley or wheat, and you also need brewer's yeast. Now, maybe they can get around to get some wheat or barley, you know, in the camp. I have no idea where they're going to get brewer's yeast.
Yeah. But I was thinking about that too, because, you know, one of these recipes I was looking at was kind of like, hey, this is like a do it your home, do it, you know, do it yourself kind of thing. But I'm like, back in, you know, throughout civilization, there was always somebody that was able to figure out a way to ferment, you know, anything to make
exactly.
it, you know, so I'm like, there, I mean, maybe there is a different way to do it. Maybe, I don't know. But I caught that too about the yeast. I'm like, where did they get the yeast from?
Yeah. Now, the funny thing is the recipe that I read, and obviously, you know, they didn't have the internet in 1942 when they were in Stalaglyph 3, but still, it mentions that the amount of yeast that you're supposed to put in, you should go according to the ratio recommended on the packet.
Oh, right. Meaning... Exactly. No, actually, one of the I said I'm from upstate New York, and I went to this it was like a colonial village type place that we, you know, it was one of those things you take the kids when you're in, it's a field trip, you know, it's like what you would do when you're in elementary school and stuff like that. But I took my kids there as an adult, and it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty fascinating place because it's stuff from, they have actual houses from like the Civil War era where it was like somebody tore it down and moved it and donated it to this museum. And, or if it was damaged, they did an exact replica, like there would be like somebody famous in that area. They build an exact replica of that person's house that had something to do with, you know, history. And, but one of the things that they have is a fully functioning brewery. And my kids were helping make beer, and they grew their own hops out and barley outside, and you could see where, and they would explain how they, you have to grow this and you bring it in, and how they did it back in like 1700s and 1800s, and explained that, you know, actually breweries are one of the first things that were built in America because they didn't trust the water. And and in fact, alcohol and beer was actually brought over on the boats because it would keep longer than the water. They would actually make a lesser alcohol potency version for children they could drink. Yeah, it was just crazy. No wonder we're a bunch of rabble rousers. But I just thought that was fascinating. But again, he did get into the yeast and he did get into all that, and it was these big vats that they used. So it's like, well, I don't know how they got it to work, but maybe they had somebody, one of the guards, smuggle it in for him. Oh, we're just going to, you know, we just want to make bread or something. I don't know.
Right. So, I mean, the rest of this minute is basically just Hiltz throwing out a bunch of comments about, you know, how potent this moonshine is. You know, like he says, it'll make your mustache grow.
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
And then he goes, hey, Eric, don't spill any of that.
Yeah, and he says, don't get any on your clothes. Like that's the part I like, too. It's like, don't get any on your clothes. Now, why is that? Is it going to stain? Is it going to, because it's flammable? Is it because it's going to burn to the touch? Like, why does he specifically, or is he just being a smartass?
Could be any of the above.
Yeah.
Or all of the above.
I took it as it's flammable. Like, yeah, you know, so.
Well, using the theory that we used from Monday, that they filled up the garbage pail with a little bit of booze before they threw the match in, that makes sense that it would be flammable.
Right.
And they continue with, you know, down with the British, keep it moving, old cobber.
Yeah.
Don't get any on your clothes. You know, we get to see, you know, a lot of the familiar faces walking by. Henley has a great line to Colin. He goes, what? Before your morning tea?
Yeah. So, you know, like, I mean, I'm fortunate for these few minutes because it's a group scene. So even though I don't get a lot of some of these other characters, I get a flash of everybody. So I like the little, hey, you know, here you go, old boy, you know,
Sedgwick.
Say, yeah, thank
Sedgwick
you.
Sedgwick says old copper.
Yeah, because I was like, I'm like, can't even think of the actor's real name right now. James Coburn. So
James Coburn. Yes.
There you go. But I wish I didn't see Danny get a drink. Charles Bronson, who's like my favorite in this movie. Mm-hmm.
That's like, right.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised think he doesn't. He doesn't drink.
Yeah,
you don't think?
Don't show him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't know. Not sure.
He seems like he's all business.
Yeah. No. He's definitely all business.
Yeah.
But that's Charles Bronson for you in any movie that he's been in. You know, I don't think I've ever seen him in a comedy. You know, where it works with
him. Right. The closest thing I would to a comedy I've seen him in was probably Death Wish 3. Because it's just so over the top.
Yeah, but it wasn't meant as a comedy.
No, I know.
That's the difference.
That's the only difference. Yeah. No, no. No comedy for Charles Bronson. He's all business, and I have nothing else for this minute either.
All right. Great. So why don't you once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
I'm co-host of the Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast with my buddy Jack Perry, and if you want to maybe send an email to either one of us, we're just at the Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast at gmail.com.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can go to our Facebook group, The Cooler, visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is GreatEscapeMXM. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.